Station number 8865, roll number 3.
Mr. Tubbs, Reel 3. Could you tell me about this time you saw the first tank that you'd seen?
Yes, I went up to him and gave him some tippy tea out of a petrol tin. He was very grateful to me and said, "Would you like to have a look at the tank?" Which I did. He said, "You know, the Brigadier couldn't come do that."
What do you remember about the tank? What did you think about it when you saw it?
Well, it was very interesting. You know how it became called a tank?
You'd like to tell me?
Yes. It was being made, and very secret, and it was announced that they were doing tanks for water in the desert. That's the name. Anyway,
did you think it was going to be a useful weapon when you saw it, looking at it with your experience so far of trench warfare? Did you think it was going to be
valuable? Well, all I know is I wouldn't like to be a wounded man on the ground when he was coming along.
What happened next, then, in this period around Beaucourt?
The day before they went over, I was sent off with my bombers to clear away the communication trench, to make sure that it was all level for us. And I got up and found a delightful place in the communication trench, looking straight down on the German lines. And there we put up sandbags, so they were settled. And then I came back and reported.
Had there been any opposition to you taking...
None at all, unfortunately.
It was in no man's land, was it?
It was in no man's land, yes. Because the method of what we did, and I trained them to do, and we did that evening, with seven of us, and six troops and myself, and the first two go ahead with fixed bayonets. The next two in the next Stratus, they had bombs. And the next two behind also had bombs. And the moment we came into trouble, which we didn't, fortunately, the bombs were thrown over, and immediately the fellows with them.
Bayonets
went over and dealt with anyone who wasn't dead, and then we gradually moved like that right the way along.
But this wasn't necessary in this case?
We did it in case we didn't know if we were meeting trouble, you see.
How exactly did you make this post? Were you say with sandbags? Did you have sandbags with you, or did you just use?
We had sandbags with us.
So what would happen? How would you make a post? Can you remember?
Well, just block up the whole area, block up the whole trench, so we were safe behind it.
And then you left the six men?
Then I left them and came back and reported to the colonel. And
this was on the 17th of November?
On the 17th. And my leg had pretty well given out by then. It was a long trip. And the next day, I was absolutely whacked. And when the colonel was explaining what was happening the next day, or that night, I was asleep. Completely asleep. Out. And all I remember is a doctor pulling my head up and said, what do you complain about? I said, I don't complain about anything. Leave me alone. And I went on sleeping. When I woke up, I was alone in the world. They'd gone. And I shout out, "Pike," my batman. He came in and said, "I said, what the hell has happened?" He said, "Well, they went up and I'm told to take you back." I said, "The hell with that. Up we go." He said, "We can't, sir. We'll just be shot." I said, "Right, we'll both be shot, won't we? We're going up." We got up and I reported to the Colonel Scott, and he says, "Well, I thought you'd come up, Dubs." And that was that. And then,
what was the situation at this time? What was your battalion actually doing when you rejoined them?
Well, they'd advanced, and they were well ahead, and snipers were rife. Unfortunately, a lot of our people got killed. In fact, anyone but me was killed the moment he put a nose above water. And Colonel asked me to go along, explain the situation to A and B Company, who were on the left, and that's exactly what I did. The two officers, the Captain Fitzmaurice and Lieutenant Chippendale, were both killed. And
how did you get forward to join these two companies? Did you have to go over open land?
I just have to go over open land. And a young second lieutenant came out to speak to me, and he was promptly shot in the leg. I put him in a shell hole and bound up his leg and told him to stay there. He'd be relieved later. And then I came back. As I say, anyone else who showed a nose was killed, and I wasn't.
What was the terrain like that you were crossing? Well, could you describe the conditions in the Arm Cross?
Very muddy. Very muddy. But
were there a lot of shell holes or barbed wire?
Oh, any amount of shell holes. Oh, yes, one had to dodge those. And then I came back and reported to the colonel. And
Was there much, when you were with A Company and explaining the situation to B Company, was there any sort of German counterattack at the time?
No counterattack at all. No, we just landed in there, mostly in shell holes, of course.
They weren't in a front line or a line at
all?
Well,
it was a line. We made a line.
But it was at an early stage of development, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. And then we were relieved. I led the battalion out. And the men were in the old German trenches. And I don't know what he was doing there. It was an Indian officer who very kindly gave me a blanket in his tent. And next morning, the colonel came and said, well, this is the lad I'm sending. The doctor said, this is the lad I'm sending back. And that was that. And then the extraordinary thing happened. This is on the 19th of November. It was the same date, a year later, that I was wounded. I went to the same advanced dressing station where I met the nurse who looked after me in Boulogne the year before. At the same hospital in Boulogne, a year later, at the day, and there I met the nurse who looked after me in London the year before. And I said one day, I said, could I see the colonel? The major he was then, I think, Major Martin, who had operated on me the year before. He said, you can't send for the RMO. I'm not sending for the RMO. I said, I think he'd be interested in meeting me. So down he came. I said, I don't remember my case. He said, of course I do. So I took a risk. If it hadn't come off, he'd have been dead in 48 hours. And then there's nothing I could do there except to go up to the top camp and edit and not edit letters, but censor letters, but I couldn't climb the hill. So all I did was to go to the hospital every morning and back to the hotel. And this went on, and one day I said, look, this is rather stupid. I come here walking normally. You give me this electric treatment, so I go away limping.
You were having electrical treatment?
Electrical treatment.
What did that consist of?
Oh, just frightful electric, I don't know, pummeling here.
On the wounded part of your leg?
On the wounded part of my leg. And finally I gave that up. And then I had orders to go to Dieppe.
Before we go to Dieppe, I'd just like to cover a couple of things about your frontline service when you were with your battalion in the front line. Censoring letters, that's one thing. Did you do that in the front line as well? Censoring the men's letters?
I'll say yes. I can't remember. We must have done. Mm. We must have done.
What did you mind censoring letters?
Or not a bit. Oh, no.
Were your own letters censored?
I don't think so, no. No. But the... they wouldn't... they knew perfectly well they mustn't give me details, and I never had to censor anything.
You never had to actually put a line through anything?
No.
I believe at this time you became a teetotaler while you were in the front line. Could you explain your reasons for that?
Very good reasons, because I had to go round all four companies by day and all four companies by night, and everywhere I went, tell me about it, have a drink. And well, I just had to cut it right out. Otherwise it would be impossible.
Was there much drinking amongst the officers?
Oh, no, not an awful lot. I mean, no more than usual. But as I say, I'd have four as I went along, possibly without doubles, and I just had to give it up. In fact, I celebrated the armistice on ginger ale and bitters.
Oh, so you gave it up for the rest of the war?
Yeah.
Could you just describe to me the actual nature of conditions on the Somme front, particularly in the Ancre area at this time?
Well, they're full of mud, and of course when we went up there, the German corpses were everywhere, stinking the place out. They had to be cleared away. And of course rats. They were the savour of Europe. But they were very big and very unpleasant, particularly when they did come over your face in the dugout. But up there, as I say, there were all these bodies to be moved, and they were moved.
What was the was there much artillery bombardment?
Oh, yes, all the time.
How did you react under what did you do during a bombardment?
Well, just nothing. Waited and talked. I remember looking at four people talking not very far away from me. Shell came and blew all four up. It didn't come my way, that's all.
Did
we
you?
We just had one big grave. We put the bodies in there. And when a parson came along, he did a little service on me.
When you were in a bombardment, did you take shelter in any particular way, on the fire step or on dugouts? Or what did you? Or did you just sit?
Well, it was just sit or... There were one or two dugouts there that we would go to. But it's just sort of normal. We had a hymn of hate every morning and a hymn of hate every evening.
Did you gain experience in the different sorts of shell and whether a shell was likely to land close to you or not?
Oh, no, it's too quickly coming up.
Are there any particular individuals you remember from this period?
Yes, my Batman Trigger. He was a tremendous character. I'm told at the Battle of Loos, when no one had any water, he was seen with buckets of water. I remember going to a new camp, and I had a fire in my room. I said, "Where'd you get the coal from?" I said, "Shh, there's a seam roller over there, sir." Tremendous character. And when I was up on that trip going to the along the communication trench, he was wounded. In fact, he had a leg blown off and refused to go back till I came back. But it was too late and he was killed. He died. But he was a great character.
Are there any other characters you particularly remember from your battalion?
Hardiman was one. He got his commission the same time as I did. A great character. And he was wounded that day. Had a shot through here.
Through the chest.
And I went with him to the doctor's. He took his coat off and said, "Do you mind if I do this?" And he just flopped over the table. And the bullet went straight through, about an inch above the heart. He later became colonel of the regiment at 21. He was hated by the brigadier and everyone else because he knew exactly what he was going to do. In fact, Brigadier came round once the day before we were going over the top and found him playing chess. And he blew his top. He said, "Well, what's the matter? I know exactly what I'm going to do." He was, as I say, a great character. He said to me one day, he said, "Tubbs, I think I'll learn the dictionary. Take six words a day." And I think he would have done. And he was offered two constituencies to put up for Parliament at the next meeting. Then he became brigade major, and he wrote to me, he said, one great thing about it is there's more chance of my coming through. But unfortunately, he went up in a tank one day, got out of the tank, and a shell killed him. He was a great character.
Any other characters?
No, I don't think so. Hardiman, I remember once, he was always prepared to make the outrageous statements and said, I'm prepared to back my statement with money. And so many people loathed his guts. I loved him. But on one occasion he said, I offered Kitchener a job once, but he refused, but he now got hold of the job. Oh, damn it, said someone. Well, he said, I'm prepared to back my statement with money. So I bet you $5 you can't prove it. Well, he said, I have to write home to my secretary and get the letter, but I'll do it. And each day he said, look, I don't want to take your fiver, back out if you like. But the letter came. He wrote to Kitchener, asked him to put up as a candidate for the provost of the university in his university. Kitchener wrote back and said, thank you for the honour, but unfortunately I can't. And he's got it now. Another great character.
Are there any other stories you can remember from your active service period that would illustrate the sort of life of a young subaltern that you can tell us?
No, I don't.
Was religion any help to you in getting through this period? Was it important to you?
It was. A curious thing happened. When I was sent over to CNB Company, as I got up, I don't know, I said, 1,000 shall fall thy hand, and 10,000 thy right hand, which will not come nigh thee. And it didn't. I don't know why I thought of it, but I did.
What was the background to your posting to Dieppe?
Well, I was just told to go to Dieppe. And that was the ammunition dump, which was quite small then, on the race course, 2 miles out at Rumenil. And I found a very small company there, and a man named Smith, who fortunately for me was slightly junior to me. So I became OC. And I was in charge of the guard of the ammunition dump.
How many men were you in charge of?
Well, I then had 125, and it was a big. I had a camp on my own, an independent unit, but the big camp up above, Colonel Cutlack was in charge, so if I had any cases I couldn't deal with, I took them to him.
What exactly was the nature of your duties and of these 125 men? What exactly did they do?
We had 5 guard rooms in the dump. I'm not sure we had 5 to start with, because it was only in its infancy, but it was being built up all the time. And finally, we had everything from small arms to 15-inch shells. And I was told at the time that the value was about £7.5 million. What would that be today? And I also, to start with, slept in a hut in the middle of the dump. So if we went up, I had to go up with it. Then they built my own little camp. And one day, there was a nasty man named Brass. I don't know what he was, but he had the ear of the base commandant. And one night, he came in through the barbed wire fence into the dump. And reported to the base commandant that I wasn't doing my job properly. I had a bit of a snort out. So I wrote and asked for more men. I was refused. And I wrote, fortunately back by Colonel Cutlack, I wrote to the base commandant in the circumstances, if I can't have more men, I can no longer hold myself responsible for the safety of the dump. So I had another 125 men.
Right.
It was over when I was 20. And lo and behold, very shortly after that, Mr. Brass did exactly the same thing. And he was collared, brought back to me, sergeant phoned me, I said, bring him here. I said, why didn't you shoot him? My orders to you were, anyone coming in through the barbed wire should be shot, because he had no right to come in there. This fellow was shaking like this. He said, whose authority? I said, my own authority. I'm responsible for the safety of the dump. And I said, you ought to be dead. He said, well, there are four other men coming. So I hope they're shot. But they weren't. They brought in, and I gave them the shock of their lives. They never had any more trouble from Master Brass.
What was the nature, this ammunition dump, it was separate from the main base camp under Colonel Cutlack, was it?
Oh, yes, it was a dump on its own.
How what was the distance between them?
Oh, half a mile.
And what was the role of this dump? Who did it supply?
It supplied all the stuff that was going up the line.
For the whole of...
The whole of the south. There's another one up north.
What arrangements exactly had you made for the defence of the dump? The barbed wire fences, did you erect those fences?
No, they were up. It had nothing to do with me.
What was the nature of the barbed wire defences? Were they fairly comprehensive or...?
They weren't particularly good.
How did you...
They come under the ordnance, Colonel in charge of the ordnance there.
How did you organise the guards round it? You say there were five.
Five. Well, they were on duty 24 hours and came off another 24 hours, half.
And they patrolled the fences, did they?
No. They patrolled up and down the... There were 10 buildings in which there were everything from small arms ammunition up to 15-inch shells. And the railway lines, two lots parallel and one across. And my men were responsible for them. I was always rather frightened because my company was quite extraordinary. They were all people from various regiments who had either never been up the line and had no intention of going up, or they'd been up the line and had no intention of going back. Rather the maimed, halt and blind. But I had a Sergeant Doran, who was as Irish as his name, but he was a sergeant in the Scottish regiment. But
were these men reliable from there?
I don't think I'd ever say that. I was always rather frightened when I went round and was challenged, they'd shoot me. And that brings me to another thing. One night, fired his gun by mistake when he was over his shoulder, and he went into a shell case, which happened with the top shell, or the top case of 18-inch shells. And there was frightful trouble, and there was a court-martial on it. And I was blamed, as I would be, but the result was that it was decreed that they should no longer have rifles, but they carry shotguns. That terrified the life out of me, because I knew they couldn't shoot me at all properly with the gun, but they couldn't miss me with the shotgun. And the base commandant was bringing round some big war office bloke, and he said, I've now armed these men with shotguns. Give them to me, sir. No, sir. No, it's all right. I'm the base commandant. No, sir. Well, that's all right, give it to me. No, sir, a sentry does not get rid of his arms. My chest went out like this. We walked on, and bang! He's so terrified. When Memory Gandhi pressed the button, and off it went.
So your duties were basically to organise the rota of sentries and then inspect them. Would that be correct?
Twice a day, once by day and once by night. And we took it in turns. I had three subalterns.
Were the guards always alert, might you say, or did you ever catch them napping, literally or otherwise?
I expected to. I don't think I did. I think they heard me coming or something. But they were a ragtime crowd.
Was there any problem with discipline with them?
No.
Well, you had separate accommodation built after the initial period when you actually stayed in the base. What was the nature of that accommodation?
Well, I had an orderly room, and I had huts for the men, and I had there was an officer's mess, and our own rooms.
So you were in fair degree of comfort.
Right? Great comfort, yes.
How were you and the men fed? Did you get the food brought over from the base camp, or?
Oh no, we had our own food. Well, we had nothing to do with the big camp, except Colonel Cartilac when I wanted him.
What sort of recreations did you do in your spare time during this period?
There weren't any.
You didn't get out of camp?
Oh, we went to DF quite often. And,
what would you do in DF?
Well, the one or two restaurants, one particular one was known as Tubbs Restaurant. And, we used to have great fun there. We'd meet others and have drinks and have the food and come back.
And that would be, how often would you go there?
Possibly a couple of days a week.
And so another subaltern would do the inspection trips while you were...
Oh, yes.
But in the actual camp, you didn't have any recreational facilities at all?
No,
there were no games with the men or football, cricket?
No. I don't think anyone ever played football or cricket. In fact, one of them, base commandant said, why are you down the line? He said, old age, sir. Old age? What do you mean, old age? How old are you? I'm 45, sir. He said, so am I.